discussed this in connection with Bali Maharaj's soldiers and their treatment by Sukracharya. Modern medical science has not yet discovered how to bring a dead body back to life or bring youthful energy to an old body. But from these verses, we can understand that such treatment is possible if one is able to take knowledge from the Vedic information. The Ashvini Kumaras were expert in Ayurveda, as was Dhanvantari. In every department of material science, there is a perfection to be achieved, and to achieve it, one must consult the Vedic literature. The highest perfection is to become a devotee of the Lord. To attain this perfection, one must consult Srimad Bhagavatam, which is understood to be the ripe fruit of the Vedic desire tree, Nigama Kalpatoyor Galitam Phalam. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So as some of you may know, I have a law practice, and in that law practice, I deal a lot with scientists, particularly a lot of Indian scientists and medical doctors. Indeed, some of those clients would be very interested in Prabhupada's words in this purport, because they deal in the science of trying to rejuvenate youthful life. I have one client that was here at University of Florida. She's actually doing research on different types of herbs from the ocean that can be used to regenerate youthful skin. Very nice lady. That was her field of research. I think that she'd be very interested in this information here, because Prabhupada's confirming that actually in the Vedic literatures, this science is there. How to use different herbs to rejuvenate youthful life, or even bring one back from death. Even bring one back from death. Sukracharya did this with Bali Maharaj's soldiers. And so this knowledge is there in the Vedic literature. But the Vedic literature is probably something that my clients and others who study these things really wouldn't be interested in, because it's kind of locked. It's locked away. Access, full access is not given, because there has to be some qualification in order to access this knowledge. It's not just you can go to the book and see it there and somehow or another it works. There has to be some qualification, and this is the problem for conditioned souls. Therefore, the Vedic literatures are locked. There are restrictions. They're not open to everyone. A conditioned soul generally has two defects which prevent him or her from accessing the Vedic literatures. One is that the conditioned soul tends to be very proud. You get a little knowledge and you think you know everything. Prabhupada gives the story of the frog in the well. Now the frog is in the well and he's trying to understand the length and breadth of the ocean, and he's trying to measure it in terms of his well. Well, is it 2 times bigger than this well? Is it 3 times, 4 times bigger than this well? When the truth is that actually there's no way you can understand the length and breadth of the ocean by comparing it to a well. It just will not give you access to what the actual ocean is. But because we're proud, we tend to try to understand things on our own terms, from our own perspective, and therefore we can't understand the Vedic literatures or the vast, vast material energy, the extent of the material energy as it actually is. So pride is one problem, and another problem is that if we get a little knowledge, we try to exploit it for ourselves. We become very exploitative. So pride and this exploitative nature really are reasons why the Vedic literatures are locked. If you had access to this knowledge, how to bring youth back to an aged body, or how to bring someone back from the dead, what would you do? So I calculated, okay, I can make a lot of money off of this, yeah. Yeah, I can make a lot of money off of this. Bring people back. But for what purpose? For what purpose? Is that the purpose? So that you can make some money? Is that the purpose of this knowledge that's there in the Vedic literatures? Well, as long as we have this exploitative mentality, then we may think like that. How we can gain an advantage over someone else. But that's not the spirit of the Vedas. The spirit of the Vedas is how to serve everyone else, not to gain an advantage over them so you can become exploitative. So this is a disqualification. Therefore, because of these disqualifications, the Vedic literatures are locked. I remember years ago, when I was on a library party, we used to do these conventions where all the academics would get together and study the Vedic literatures. And at one conference, they were planning what they would do next year. And then they all got very excited because the next year, what they were going to do is they were going to study Balaram. We're going to study Balaram. Yes, we're going to study Balaram. As if they could actually get some insight into who is Lord Balaram and what are his pastimes. No, the Vedic literatures remain locked because of these two things and many other disqualifications. It depends on your character. Therefore, if you develop the proper character, then this wealth of knowledge that's there in the Vedas becomes available to you. Even to the extent of this very knowledge which is described here today. For instance, in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was one devotee whose name was Saranga Thakur. We know the tremendous service Saranga Thakur Das did in our Pujari room back here. If you don't know, go take a look at it. Check it out. It's a great job. But he's named for a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, named Saranga Thakur, who was from the village of Mamagachi, which is not far from, actually, our ISKCON property there in Sri Mayapur Dham. So Saranga Thakur, he was living there very humbly, a very humble devotee. Actually, he was doing his bhajan under a bakul tree. But that bakul tree was like dying. It was old and dying, no flowers, nothing. But still, he was satisfied sitting there doing his bhajan. But in his heart, he was getting some inspiration from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he should participate in the Sankirtan movement by initiating disciples. But he thought, no, I'm not qualified. I won't do that. I just sit here and I'll do my bhajan. That's fine. But this urging was coming in his heart. This inspiration in his heart was there by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even the Lord visited him. And when he visited him and he saw he was doing his bhajan in his bakul tree that was dying, he embraced that bakul tree. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. And that tree immediately sprung back to its youthful existence. The bark became full and strong. Leaves came out of the branches. And flowers, this bakul flower, started to bloom. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu encouraged him, please, you give your mercy to others so that they can also chant the holy name of the Lord. So still he was resisting. And finally, after seeing this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bringing this tree back to its useful existence, he thought, the Lord wants me to do this service, therefore I will do it. Actually, tomorrow morning when I get up, I'll initiate the first person I meet. I'll initiate that person. So in the morning he got up, he went to the Ganga, took his bath, and as he was bathing, he felt something brush up against his body. And what was that? It was a dead body. So he had taken a vow, tomorrow morning, the first person I meet, I will initiate. So he touched that dead body with his foot, whispered in his ear the mantra, and immediately the body came back to life. Just as is described here in the purport. Immediately that body came back to life, and he initiated him. He gave him the name Murari. So Murari, he actually became a great devotee in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. But this is the power of the Maha Mantra. Even the Maha Mantra itself, chanted in this way by Suranga Thakur, brought this dead body back to life. Actually, there's a little history behind this boy. Apparently he was bitten by a snake. And the tradition in Bengal at that time was is that if you're bitten by a snake, rather than burn the body, they just throw it in the Ganges. So that's what his parents did. He was bitten by a snake, so they threw the body in the Ganges. So when the parents came to know that actually their son had come back to life, they ran there and they told him, "Oh son, please, come with us, come home now. Come home." And he said, "No. That life which you gave is finished. That life is dead. Now the life I'm given by my Guru Maharaj, that life I'm living. So no, I won't go with you. I'll stay with my Guru Maharaj." So for us, we've also been given that Maha Mantra. We've also been given another life. We've been given another life. Seems like the same life, seems like the same body. But no, we have a new life. We have new opportunities. What does new life mean? New life means that we have new opportunities. So by taking this Hare Krishna mantra, by the grace of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, we actually have a new life, new opportunities to perfect our life. New opportunities to delve into the Vedic literatures. Actually, we have all the Vedic literatures, all that knowledge available to us. But if we're actually the disciple, we won't be exploitative, neither will we be proud. But rather, we'll see ourselves as the humble servant of others to give them this knowledge for their benefit, to give them another life. To give them another life. Actually, they're being robbed of their lives now, their so-called lives now. They're being robbed of their lives. Because what is the use of the life? Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that, is it Bhaktivinoda Thakur? I spend my days in the endeavor of chasing after money, uselessly trying to maintain this life. And at night, I spend my time either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, wasting my life. What is that life? They're being robbed of, especially the human form of life, which is an opportunity to understand our relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's the new life we've been given by chanting the Maha Mantra. And so, the Vedic literatures are vast and they have all kinds of knowledge there, but if we're not qualified, we'll simply misuse it. Now one may ask, well, why is it that God would create something that would simply cause problems for us? And the answer is that, wait a minute, you're not the center of creation. You're only a minute particle of the Lord's plan. And He's complete. So therefore, His creation is complete. It's not complete for us, it's complete for Him. We have a role to play in the creation of the Lord, but it's not a central role. And when we understand that, then we can get beyond this problem of evil that plagues so many philosophers when they think about God these days. It's why is there evil in the world? Well, there is evil because we conceive of it like that, not because Krishna conceives of it like that. We conceive of it like that because we are only a small, minute particle who plays a small part in the total creation of the Lord. And there are other functions and purposes of the Lord's creation than just to satisfy us. When we understand that, we understand our position in relation to the creation of the Lord, then the Lord may create things from poison to paradise. And we may perceive them as good or bad according to our minute position in the whole scheme of things, but that's not the totality of the reason why everything exists. The reason why everything exists is to please Krishna, to show His complete nature. And when we understand that, then we can also understand why it is that we follow only particular parts of the Vedas. For instance, the Vedas, they recommend demigod worship, but we don't follow demigod worship. The Vedas recommend so many things, but we don't necessarily do them. But what do we do? We're fortunate, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, to be given the key to what is the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the highest perfection. We've been given that. And therefore we follow our acharyas who have given us that. There's one nice verse glorifying the six Goswamis in this regard about how they have taken a look at the entire body of the Vedic literatures, and they have specifically drawn out the essence. I'm sure you all know this verse. It's from Srinivasacharya's Sri Sri Sad Goswami Astaka. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sat Dharma Samstapa Ko Lokanam Hitakarano Tri Bhuvane Manyo Saranya Karo Radha Krishna Padada Vindra Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Bande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in a transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So the Goswami literatures are the result of this search through all the Vedic literatures. They have determined for us, those who follow in their footsteps, what is important from the Vedas to know and to follow, and what is not important for us and that we don't follow. This is what parampara means. Following in the footsteps of those who know the Vedas. and who have extracted the essence for our benefit. Therefore, we take the practices that we undertake. Therefore, we avoid those things that are even recommended in the Vedic literatures. Again, the Vedic literatures are a vast body of knowledge. How are we supposed to approach that ocean and gain any benefit? That benefit is gained by following the Goswamis, focusing on the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is described as the ripened fruit of all the Vedic literatures, and in that way gain the highest perfection. Not to become distracted by all these things, like, you know, making ourselves youthful again or bringing people back from the dead. Fine, that's there. But that's not our path. Our path is found in this chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So if we have great faith in that, then we'll achieve the perfection of life. And that's sometimes a challenge. And it's a challenge that we face right here in our community, that we faced even in the installation of Sri Sri Krishna Balaram. Someone mentioned to me during the time period of the installation, they were saying, oh, all this is very good, but what's going to happen 20 years from now? Who's going to be worshipping Sri Sri Krishna Balaram 20 years from now? And so, fair enough. Who's going to be worshipping Sri Sri Krishna Balaram? We don't see a lot of young pujaris lining up, so in our material calculation we may think, oh, this may be a problem. But if we have faith in the holy name of the Lord, then we needn't fear. When Sri Sri Krishna Balaram were installed in Sri Vrindavan Dham by Srila Prabhupada, you know, he had some priest come in to do all the ceremonies and everything like that. But what did he actually say was the real installation of Sri Sri Krishna Balaram? The chanting. He said that the Maha Mantra was sufficient. So we also had so many big priests coming in to do our installation here. But there was something that took place, and it was predominated by the youth. Can anybody tell me what that was during our installation? Yeah, the kirtan. The kirtan was, and who was the kirtan dominated by? I mean, sure, there was Indradyumna Swami and Radhana Swami and Lokana Swami, but who was responding? And who was chanting when they weren't chanting? All the youth, they were the ones doing that. So if that's the real installation, why have we fear 20 years from now? If we have faith in the holy name? And that our youth, and even us, we continue to chant the holy name with faith and determination, then why wouldn't Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Radha Shamsundar, and Sri Sri Gaurantai be taken care of very well decades into the future? Certainly they will. And I think that was evidenced by the youth dominating our real installation procedure 2 weeks ago here in New Ramanarika Dham. So this is what the Goswamis have prescribed. This is what Srila Prabhupada has prescribed. If we have faith in it, then we'll achieve perfection. But if we don't have faith, if we want to revert to being proud and exploitative, then we won't really progress very much in achieving the goal of life, which is to get out of this material body and go back to Godhead, not to make it fresh and youthful again by some means known by the Ashwini Kumaras. So, are there any comments or questions on this subject matter, Pendra?
Thank you, Prabhu. I have a question regarding the request that Chavana Muni did for Ashwini Kumaras. About, we know that he was married to a very young girl, and he was a Muni. So, in this regard, what was the purpose of him getting youthful body.
What was the purpose?
Yes.
Well, I guess he just wanted to please his wife. There are verses discussing that as we go forward here, a little more in the chapter. This is just text number 11. The chapter has 30 verses or so. Well, it may be contradictory to our goal in life as devotees of Lord Krishna, but it may not be contrary to his goal of life as a follower of the Vedic culture. I don't know the history of Chaivana Muni. Maybe someone knows history of Chaivana Muni in terms of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. I don't think he was doing something that was sinful in terms of the entirety of the Vedic culture. He wasn't like Frankenstein or something trying to put the body back together. I mean, that's sinful, but he was doing the following a Vedic process, right? And so, but it's not our process. Our process is something different, so we wouldn't say that, oh, I'm going to do that too, you know? I'm going to, you know, find out this mantra and somehow or another become young again or something. For what? You know, that's not our process. Our process is chant Hare Krishna.
But this story is here in Bhagavatam, which is related by, by Sukadeva Swami.
Yeah, but what is the purpose? The purpose may not be for us to want to imitate it, but to understand how one can be distracted by the Vedic literatures. Pride and what did I say? Exploitative and forgetful. Yes, Anugrat.
First question is, where is that story of Sharangatakur? It's not in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is it?
Probably Chaitanya Bhagavat.
Chaitanya Bhagavat. The other thing is, it's a great idea. I mean, the holy name is very powerful, and if you have faith in the holy name, many things will manifest. But I'm just wondering whether, you know, devotees don't have to make a separate endeavor to accomplish certain aspects of Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada himself, he wanted a book published on deity worship. He wanted devotees to get trained to go to LA to learn how to be pujaras and everything else. So, you know, the chanting of the holy name is the basis, and that keeps the purity in the devotees. But I'm just wondering whether, you know, without a separate endeavor to become a, you know, like expert in different aspects of Krishna consciousness, if they're just going to happen. I think, you know, we need to train people and emphasize to people, you know, obviously the kirtan is the most important thing, but these are other aspects of Krishna consciousness that are very essential. So
yeah, there was a discussion about this, this question of whether a separate endeavor is needed to, what were we talking about? I was talking with Radhanath Swami when he was here, about whether a separate endeavor is needed to accomplish something or just chanting Hare Krishna would accomplish it. And his point was, well, why are you making a distinction between this is a separate effort or something like that? In other words, you've been chanting Hare Krishna nearly 40 years, and so therefore you're thinking that the studying the deity worship thing is necessary. That's why you're thinking that, because you've been chanting Hare Krishna for 40 years. So that is the result of chanting Hare Krishna, to think like that. And so if someone's chanting Hare Krishna, they will think like that. It's not that it's a separate thing. I mean, that arises in your mind and heart because you're chanting Hare Krishna. And so if someone's chanting Hare Krishna, and that will arise in their mind and heart. And that faith we had to have, that encourage somebody, chant Hare Krishna, continue to chant Hare Krishna. Because my faith is that in your heart will arise a necessity to understand that I need to get trained in how to do deity worship. You know, I don't see it as a separate thing. Yes?
You were talking about how pride is one of the disqualifications that keeps us from unlocking the truths of the Vedas, and also from just understanding the vast material energy. And I was considering also how pride keeps us from understanding each other. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we're locked into our own very small way of seeing reality, that we can't properly appreciate each other, therefore. And I was wondering, are there any tips that you might give for dealing with pride?
Chanting Hare Krishna. Actually, the best way to appreciate others is to be in the kirtan with them. When you're in a kirtan with everybody, then everyone's smiling so nicely and they're dancing so nicely in different ways. And it actually defeats old age. And if you don't believe me, go to Orlando, particularly on a Sunday, in the Sunday feast kirtan, and see Trivikram Maharaj. Trivikram Maharaj must be over 70 by now. He must be. And you should see him dance. I was like winded in the kirtan he was leading there. He was running around and jumping up and down. And doing, I mean, wow. I mean, he's defeated old age by the kirtan. Appreciating others can also be done in the kirtan. That's their real self. That's our real self.
Just to carry on where we left off. Thing is, I mean, Prabhupada didn't just tell us to chant Hare Krishna. We had to go to the morning program. We had to go out and book distribution. We had to study the books, you know. We had to do a lot of different things. And it was, and it's all got to be very sort of organized and what's regulated and everything else. So, you know, obviously the chanting is great and there's a lot of purification of that, but I really am not totally convinced that, you know, these other things aren't absolutely essential if we expect a very high standard of, you know, Krishna consciousness with all the different aspects.
Well, I think that it will come. That's the faith we have to have, because even what we did started from chanting Hare Krishna. It started from, the reason why we did all those things is because we were chanting Hare Krishna, not that we did them and then we could chant. And so we have to have faith that it will, and it does. I mean, I think that it's sort of a misstatement to say that, to come up with the statement that the person said to me that, well, what will happen in 20 years, as if nothing is going on in regard to young people and deity worship. I don't think that that's true.
Children.
That's true also. Yes.
I just wanted to say, in response to a Kendra Prabhu's question about pride, Varshana Swami was saying that in regards to anartas and endeavoring to purify our heart of them, that one of the steps also is obviously to not feed that dog. Bhaktivinoda Maharaj talked about the good dog and the bad dog. So to not feed the bad dog of acting on pride, even if we see it's there. And also just obviously feeding the other good qualities that we have some a little bit of. And also he was saying to confide in others on the question of the anartha also. That also helps for it to go from the heart to talk openly and honestly about it, and those we can trust who will be understanding and have some understanding of the philosophy, obviously, and the goal of life. So I thought that was very nice, because it's something that had come up in conversation in the last week also with myself and some friends. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Anything else over there? Over there? Madan Mohan?
In regards to Adikarta's question, I was remembering when there used to be cassette tapes from And there was a conversation that took place in Hawaii between Rameshwar, at the time Maharaj, and Srila Prabhupada, that the name on the tape used to be called Independent Householder Life. And he was asking Prabhupada, he said, they say they can chant Hare Krishna and do anything. So Prabhupada said, yes, what is your philosophy? So he said, well, they're not coming, they're not surrendering, they're not going out, they're not doing anything. And they think just chanting Hare Krishna and they can become pure. So there's a little bit of pause, and then Prabhupada said, what is the meaning of the 10 types of offenses? He says, if they're not committing any offense, then it's a fact. He says, but all these other programs, these are to assist us to not commit the offenses. So he related it like that.
Stevie?
This is in a different gear, maybe. You know, this Muni, you know, I think this is brought up in the first question, I guess you touched on his class. I mean, by ISKCON standards, he's a little creative. He's marrying teenagers and he's performing creative, you know, Vedic rituals to do all these. I mean, and this is the same Vedic culture. You know, this is part of the Vedic culture. It's, you know, it's, I guess you discussed in class, but it seems there's a lot going on here. I was joking. Was he like an ISKCON sannyasi before he did this? I mean, who did he get approval from?
I don't think so, maybe. Yes.
I mean, you can see so many things, so many reasons why he dipped in, with the Ashwini Kumars to get young, but one way you can see that how much a person can appreciate, he certainly could have done before, become young before, but he did that as an appreciation or reciprocation for his wife, which there's nothing wrong as far as I'm concerned. You see, Karma Muni did the same thing for appreciation for Mother Devahuti after she had performed all this sacrifice and for him, and so I think we can see it with another angle and how we could reciprocate with devotees for those who have done service. That's one angle.
Yeah, well, that's the point. There are many different angles and points of view and authority that can be found in the Vedic literatures for practically anything, but they can be distracting, and our purpose in life should be focused on achieving relief from this material energy. And if we're engaged or absorbed in discussion or debate, whether we need a separate endeavor or it's just chanting Hare Krishna, then that's okay, because we're all within that safe path given to us by the Goswamis that will take us back to Godhead. We may not resolve those questions, you know, we may be debating them until we die, but that's okay. That's a good debate to have, not, you know, that we're debating, you know, whether we should, you know, jump into a lake and become young again or something. So, Mother, what's your?
One thing, that debate, I went to a doctor's office down the road from, in Mayapur, down towards the Ghat, and they were having that debate there, uh-huh. Whether it's the holy name or whether it's deity worship. Uh-huh. And they were, all the Goswami books, they were coming up. It was quite amazing, but they were also debating. But I was also thinking that this question of humility, also that's one of the things we have deity worship, so we can submit our time, our energy, to worshiping Krishna, giving freely, not expecting anything, you know, cooking his offerings, or that also makes for a humble, a servant attitude, and mm-hmm. serving the spiritual master instead of just, it's all my time and I do what I want, and, you know, like that. So that also creates some humility for being a servant.
Hmm. Yes. Anything else that anyone has for Lane? Yeah. Okay, last point.
It's not antithetical to our philosophy, but it's rather the very principle of relationship and encouraging people is the essence of Srila Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. What he didn't do to encourage all the devotees is, I mean, maybe you could see Chavana Muni is doing the same thing with his wife.
Mm. Yes, okay, well, we have another.
The thing that I see is that there might be many different devotional services, such as, being a pujari, but the one thing that's common to every single person is the chanting. That's the one thing that we all have to do, that is the Yuga Dharma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a basis for everything. So without that, then, all these other things don't really have any ground point, so yes. So that's a good point to end on. Rantarashi Mad Bhagavatam.